You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecini. We are presented by The Athletic. Today on the show, good friend of the program, Tony Jones, is back in the building. Tony, what's going on, man?
It's been too long, Sam.
Well, you have like kids and shit. Like, you have like actual household duties that you end up having to...
I do have kids.
I guess you have to like prioritize your children over me. I mean, whatever.
My kids have better lives than I do. I'm just saying, like, my 17-year-old, she gets up this morning. She's like, Dad, can you cash at me $20? Why? It's 9 o'clock in the morning. Well, me and Dylan, we're going to brunch. We're doing brunch. She said, we're doing brunch. Like, the little girl is 17 years old, and she's talking about doing brunch. Like, and she's like, and I need just a little bit of extra cash flow. So can you just cash at me $20? And I was just like, okay. I'll give you $20. And like 5 minutes later, like I heard the door slam. Like, so she was actually like, you know what I mean? She
out the door.
Actually went out. She did out the door, did a brunch. She had her sunglasses on at 9 a.m. And I was just like, what is this?
And it's like, not so, brunch, yeah. If it's 9 a.m. It's breakfast. You're going to breakfast. Come on now.
I mean, whatever she wants to call it or whatever. Whatever, like, she wants to characterize it as, that's what she did. And I'm just like, I'm just sitting here scanning my fantasy because I need another kicker because Tristan Vizcaino was on a bye week, and I'm waiting for NFL Red Zone to come on, and she's doing brunch. So yeah, she has a better life than I do.
I had a miracle comeback in fantasy this week because of Cooper Kupp and Chris Godwin and Khalil Herbert. So I'm pretty happy. The dynasty league that I'm in with my college boys is strong. And then I'm like also just like demolishing and dump trucking the college basketball fantasy writers league that I'm in. So it's been the best fantasy season for your boy in probably 10 years. We're just rolling right along.
This is the worst fantasy team I've ever had.
Oh God.
Like I'm getting beat by 50 plus every week. I'm 1-6 or whatever. I'm 1 for the season. I'm not going to win another game. It's just been a complete and utter disaster.
Yeah. You're having a tough time then. You're having a real tough time.
I'm having a really tough time. And I take real pride in my fantasy team every year. And the league that I have with, you know, my childhood friends is 12 of us. It's a 12-team league, PPR league, and it's $100 every year to get in. So, you know, the winner gets $1,000, the winner of the regular season gets $200. And, you know, my nickname in the league is called my nickname is the donor.
Oh God, that's a disaster.
So, yeah, that's my nickname, the donor. Like, I just donate $100 every year.
Yeah. There are worse things to do than spending $100 to hang out with your friends, even virtually.
Yeah, but I mean, the last 3 or 4 years I've been good enough. Like, I've gone to the playoffs, like, I've been competitive, but this year I'm not competitive, and it's just really killing me. It's just been a disaster.
Well, speaking of non-competitive, I got to start our basketball conversation talking about the team that you saw opening night for the Jazz, the Oklahoma City Thunder. I mean, what a non-competitive team. But as I ask everyone who comes on this podcast, I mean, you got to see Alexei Pokuševski live. I mean, what a human. What were your impressions of Pokuševski?
He didn't do anything against the Jazz.
He really didn't, did he? But it's like, the experience is just seeing someone that skinny, that gangly, doing what he does on the court, which is like the weirdest game possible. And just getting to see that in person. Poku, what a character.
So they didn't run anything for him. I didn't know what they were running. Like, they weren't really running anything all game. You know, it was basically like, you know, SGA and Lou, you know, throwing something up, and maybe the ball swings to Bazley in the corner and he attacks a closeout. Maybe Favors gets an offensive rebound and he tries to finish, or a dump off and he tries to finish, something like that. But, like, you know, like, they weren't really running anything. Like, they've got to find an identity. And it was, you know, when Poku got on the floor, it was basically like he was just basically doing cardio. You know,
the last thing that man needs is cardio too. He needs weight room.
He needs the weight room. He needs the weight room, not the treadmill. I need the treadmill. So, like, he was on the treadmill basically.
Oh man, so, what a shame.
Yeah.
It's funny that we're starting on Poku, because this episode is going to be on contenders. We're talking about our first week impressions of the best teams in the NBA. So we're going to talk about the Utah Jazz, the team that Tony covers. We're going to talk about the Milwaukee Bucks, the defending and reigning NBA champions. I'm going to throw in the 76ers, and I'm going to throw in the Nets. And then we're also going to throw in Denver. We're going to throw in Phoenix. We're going to throw in the Lakers. And then I'll probably ask at the end if you think there's anyone else worth talking about. But I think that those are the teams. But I guess that where I'll start is just simply, like, are those the only teams? It feels more wide open this year than I can remember. And I talked about this on the last podcast with Danny LaRue, but I think I want to put a twist on the question here. Does the league to you feel more competitive top to bottom than you can remember? Because really right now, like, I feel like there are only three, like, disaster situations. Like, Orlando and Oklahoma City are absolutely terrible. And then Houston, I think, is pretty bad. But the rest of the teams, I kind of watch them and I'm like, okay, this team can probably compete on any given night.
I really like the way the league is constructed this year. I think it's wide open. I think any one of eight or nine teams can win. You know, and I think there are varying degrees to where they can win it. But I mean, you look at the East, right? Like, you know, I mean, you know, people want to look at the Nets as this juggernaut that's a prohibitive favorite. I don't think they're prohibitive favorites. Like, I think they're one of the favorites. I think they might be, you know, the favorite by a slight margin, but every single team that's a favorite right now has a flaw.
Yep.
You can look at every single team and you can point out a flaw, and you can point out a reason why they won't win it. There's no 2017 or 2018 Golden State Warriors here. You know, so I just really like, you know, the way it's constructed. And, like, if you go out East, right, like, I look at Brooklyn, I look at Milwaukee, but I also look at, you know, Philly, Atlanta, and Miami. Like, you know, you look at all five, you look at all of those teams, and then, you know, that's not even taken into account. You know, that's not even taken into account others. So, and the West is always competitive, and I don't even, you know, look at the West, and I wouldn't even disconsider somebody like the Clippers. What if they get Kawhi back in time?
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing. Like, all of these teams, it's going to be interesting to see how all of it shakes out.
I'm glad that you brought up the idea of flaws, because it does seem like there are some real flaws in basically every team this year. So, like, maybe that's a place to start, is maybe we start in the East and then go West. and just kind of talk about the flaws and then also talk about like the way that they can overcome these flaws. I mean, in Brooklyn's case, A, they're missing Kyrie. Like, they need another creator out there. It's weird to say that a team with James Harden and Kevin Durant like needs another guy. They just need someone else who can like get their own shot, because like Joe Harris can't get his own shot. Nick Claxton can't get his own shot. Blake Griffin, like, realistically can run the break a little bit now, but like, he's not getting his own shot in the half court. They actually need like a third tertiary option to get his own shot, and Kyrie is that guy. Like, they desperately need Kyrie, it feels like, and they also need like James Harden to work his way back into basketball shape, and need a few other things to happen. But I really do think that they actually need Kyrie in order to be the prohibitive favorite. And I wasn't totally sure about that coming into the year.
Well, they do, because what they need is for them to win a championship with the way they're going to defend, they need to be a historically good offensive team. So, you know, they need Kyrie to be able to bend defenses the way he does off the dribble. They need James Harden to get back in shape, because he's not in shape right now, because James isn't beating anybody off the dribble. And, you know, obviously Durant's one of the three best players in the world. So, but they need all of that, because what they need is, the way the roster is set up, like, they need to be able to be this efficient offensive monster, because when it comes down to it, defensively, they're not going to get stops. They got to, at the highest level, they need to outscore people. I mean, they're not, you know, Kevin Durant's the best defender they have on their team. You know, they're not stopping people. They're going to have to outscore people. So, you know,
I mean, Charlotte kind of kicked their ass today. Like, did you watch that game?
Yeah, I did. Because, I mean, who's going to keep LaMelo Ball out of the paint on that team? Nobody.
And Miles Bridges, like,
Miles wrecked them, because time and time again, LaMelo was just getting pick and rolls. He was getting James Harden or Patty Mills or Joe Harris or whoever on him. He's getting by him, getting into the paint, and wreaking havoc. Like, it was so bad. Gordon Hayward wasn't even a factor in this game tonight.
Terry Rozier didn't play.
And Terry Rozier didn't even play. How about Charlotte at 3-0, by the way?
They're tough,
fun.
Man.
They're legitimately fun.
Yeah, they're like fun. They're not last year they were fun. And like, I threw it as, look, like, I think that Charlotte fans were happy to be fun last year. But like, it's almost a like discredit to them, right? Oh yeah, like, they're the fun team, you know. Like, this year they might actually be a good team, and it's because Miles Bridges like might be a like on his way to getting a like $90 million contract. I understand like why they didn't come to an agreement with him. We might look back at that as being every bit of a mistake as Phoenix not coming to an agreement with DeAndre Ayton, because he has come out and looked incredible this year. Like, he is so athletic. He's a perfect running mate for LaMelo Ball. He's shooting the ball well. And he shot the ball well last year too. Like, Miles Bridges really might be on the precipice of being like a top 50 player in the NBA.
And, well, and the other thing is, he's figured it out. Like, right, like, he's figured out how to play with LaMelo. He's figured out how to play off of Gordon. You know, he knows how to play off of Terry Rozier. He knows the right where to cut, when to cut. He knows how to get on. He knows that if he gets on the break, like, he's going to get the ball from LaMelo. And he's finishing. He's not trying to. I thought in the first couple of years, he was trying to do too much off the dribble.
Yeah.
Like, he's not trying to do too much off the dribble right now. He's, you know, he's catching and shooting. He's maximizing on the floor what his strengths are.
Yep.
Instead of playing to his weaknesses. And, you know, when you do that, then guess what? You start looking a lot better. But I mean, you know, Charlotte did a great job in the draft process. They knew that LaMelo Ball was the guy, and they ignored all of the criticism. They ignored a lot of the naysayers. There are very few media members, and I'm going to toot my own horn, and I know you're going to toot your own horn, but there are very few media members who thought LaMelo Ball was going to be a superstar.
Yeah.
And
And I'll be real, like, I don't even know that I thought he was going to be a superstar. I thought he'd be an all-star. I didn't, like, he has a chance to be a top 10 player in the league is where we're at this point.
I gave him the highest grade. I gave him the highest grade in the class. I gave him a superstar grade.
Yeah. Like, I had him at number one, but, like, I didn't, like, love him as much as you did. And I still had him as, like, a future all-star. So, like, it's the whole thing is, I mean, he is a star. He is. His ability to break guys down off the dribble, it's real. And we saw it today against Brooklyn, like, to get back to the point of this podcast. Like, he's just, like, kind of completely bent Brooklyn defensively to his will in terms of where he wanted to get on the court.
Yeah. And he can shoot it.
Yep.
And he's 6'8". And even if he doesn't do anything off of isolation, he's such a good pick and roll player that the isolation doesn't really matter. And yet he's still a great isolation player.
Yeah.
So he's just got the entire package offensively. You know, he's a special guy.
How bad do we think Brooklyn is defensively? Because that's what I'm still trying to figure out. Like, I had more expectation maybe for Nick Claxton entering this year. Like, I don't know how good he's looked so far in that role. He's definitely getting his points because James Harden is feeding him. But, like, he's not looked as aggressive defensively as what I would have liked to have seen. Like, there's a reason that Javon Carter is in this rotation. And they just need, like, guys who kind of set the tone defensively on some level. Like, James Johnson, like, comes in and he's at least tough and physical. But James is also, what, 34 now? It's tough. Yeah. Paul Millsap's 36. That's why he's playing 11 minutes a night. Like, it's hard, I think, for those guys to come in and truly be like the high level defensive players that this team needs. Like, they need energy more than anything, I think.
Yeah, I think they're a bad defensive team because, I mean, it's like the trifecta for me. They're not a great rim protecting team. They don't stop the ball at the point of attack, and they don't have great wing defense. And your best player is your best defender, which is okay if you have other defenders, but, you know, I mean, there are just too many places that teams can go. Like, okay, you got James in space. Okay, go at James's guy, whoever's got James. You got Joe Harris in space. Go at Joe Harris. You got, you know, when Paul or LaMarcus is on the floor, oh, let's run pick and roll at those guys.
And I'll give, you know, Blake Griffin – I'll give Blake Griffin credit for something real quick. I think he's gotten a lot better at dealing in space than what he used to be.
Yeah. But, I mean, there's just too many guys that are in their rotation who have to play 25 minutes a night where you can just go at.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I've never for one minute thought that, you know, there are going to be a team that stops anybody. But the collection of talent is such that also – may not matter because they could be that good offensively.
Yeah.
You know, you say, okay, yeah, we can't stop anybody, but we have James Harden, we have Kyrie Irving, we have Kevin Durant, we have, you know, we have, like, you know, two dozen shooters surrounding them. So you spread the floor out, you run, and you just win. You just win a bunch of games, 130-120. So, you know, that's the formula, and they can win a championship that way. Like, you can win, Brooklyn can win a championship that way, but, you know, just as long as people, like, you know, you just got to tell the truth. Like, they're not stopping anybody on the way to the championship. They're just going to outscore people.
I will say this. Kevin Durant looks every bit as good as what he did at the end of last year, and that just might be all that absolutely matters. Like, that might just be
absolutely
it. In the playoffs, like, when they get there. Kevin Durant looks like the best player in the world right now. Like, it's between him and Giannis to me is where I'm at. I don't know that there's any other correct answer.
Yeah, I'm still putting LeBron up in there.
I don't think I am.
But I am, though. I still think he's on that level.
So
maybe I'm proven wrong, but.
Our questions on Brooklyn are defense and secondary creation outside of Harden and Brooklyn.
I think they'll get Kyrie back, by the way.
Let's hope. I don't even know that I want to, like, talk about. Like, I don't even want to talk about Kyrie. Yeah. And, like, speculate on his deal just because it's like it's overwrought. It's just we know what the deal is. He needs to figure out what he cares about and what he wants to do. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Facts.
let's go to the Lakers and talk about LeBron now, though, because I think LeBron is also looks really good. He's shooting the hell out of the ball. Like, he is absolutely shooting the hell out of it, and he's taking a ton of threes. He's already taken 20 threes in two games as of the time that we're recording this. If he's shooting like that, then I might, like, if he's a legit, like, 42% three-point shooter, then, yeah, he might be the best player in the world still. I just don't know if he's going to bring it defensively often enough, which I think is, like, concern to me in general around this Lakers team. And I tweeted it after their game against Phoenix. I think that the way this team wins is through length, activity, like playing good defense. Like, they need to push the tempo. They need to almost play at Russell Westbrook's pace more than LeBron's pace. And that sounds weird to, like, base the team off of Russ than LeBron, because LeBron is clearly, like, Russ is their third best player. LeBron is freaking LeBron James. He's unbelievable. But I think that they're at their best when they can try and force turnovers, play aggressive defensively, try and get in transition more often, because the half court offensively for them right now is a slog, because they have no idea how to space with Russell Westbrook, with Kent Bazemore, with Rajon Rondo, and then obviously with the two bigs and DeAndre Jordan and Dwight Howard on the court. They have no real idea how to make that work on offense yet. So if I was them, like, and this is something that's antithetical to where they are as a team, because they are older. Like, there have been so many jokes made about how old this Lakers team is, and for fair reason, right? But they need to be an older team that plays super hyper aggressive defensively. And I just don't know what that looks like. So where are you at on the Lakers at this point?
Number one, they've looked awful outside.
They have not looked good.
Possibly, yeah. Outside of possibly LeBron. Like if you're a Laker fan and you're looking for a silver lining, the silver lining is LeBron looks like LeBron through two games. And he looked like LeBron in the preseason as well. Now, the concern with LeBron is that he's scoring 30 a night because he's making jump shots. He's not scoring 30 a night because he's getting to the rim. He's making jump shots. So the question is the shot making real? And if the shot making is real, then yes, LeBron is definitely still LeBron. I'm of the opinion that you need to make Russell Westbrook a six man, but that's never going to happen. So I don't know if that's worth talking about.
Yeah, it's not, just because I think that this early portion of the season needs to be about, like, this first 20 game stretch, it needs to be about making Russell Westbrook work, like, even more than winning games. They just need to figure out like, what do they do? Because I talked about this with Cole Huff last week on the podcast. The best action that any team in the NBA can run is a LeBron James, Anthony Davis pick and roll, right? Like, I think you'd probably agree with that.
Right.
Like, it's not that Russ is bad necessarily.
I agree.
It's that you just can't do anything better than run a LeBron AD pick and roll. So when that's the case, what do you do with Russell Westbrook when he's on the court in those actions that should be the basis of your offense? Like, you should build everything out.
But see, that's the thing, right?
Like, you should build everything out from LeBron James AD pick and roll, and then figure out what to do with the other three guys on the court. And in Russ's case, he's just never been good without the ball. So I don't know what to do there.
So if you run a LeBron AD pick and roll right now, you've got Dwight Howard's man sloughing up in the lane. You've got Russ's man in the lap on the right side. You've got Kent Bazemore's man in the lap on the left side. And in you've got zero space.
Right.
To run it.
The way you almost have to run it is you almost have to, it has to be AD at the five lineups. But on offense, like, Russ almost has to be your five, where he's, like, in the dunker spot and he's in the corner cutting and trying to get behind the defense, right?
So I mean, it's there's just no space, there's no pace. I just don't know. I don't know how you do it at this point. You almost have to clear out a side so you actually have a side and you run the pick and roll that way. But you can't run it from any other spot on the floor. You can't run from the top because there's just going to be too many people in your lap forcing a kick out. And, you know, at that point, guys need to figure out how to play with each other. Guys need to cut. And, you know, the thing that won the Lakers the championship 2 years ago was that, you know, A, obviously LeBron was great, and obviously Anthony Davis was great, but they were so physical that they beat the crap out of everybody in the league because, you know, the league went small ball while they were big, and they were able to be big but stay in front defensively as well. And, you know, eventually, you know, their physicality just killed everybody. So, you know, they have to find a way to make that physicality work for them more than other teams, you know, make spreading you out work for them. Or you could just go back in time and not trade for Russell Westbrook and just trade for Buddy Hield. But that's another story.
Yeah, they need a connector in the lineup with those guys, which is why I felt like they actually found some success weirdly with Austin Reeves at the end of that Phoenix game, because he was just like moving the ball and he was a confident shooter. And like, frankly, like Austin, Austin can make catch and shoot threes, but like he hit 28% from threes last 2 years in college. I legit think teams guard him out there because he's white. Right? Like that happens. Right? Am I like losing my mind?
if you see the white guy on an all black AAU team, he's the shooter.
And like Austin might not actually be the shooter yet, but teams guard him
that's the unwritten rule.
Yeah.
That's the unwritten rule.
Teams guard him like he is. So that actually really helped their offense a lot. And he knows where to be defensively. Like I legit think that they should try him in the first half of their next game and see him playing with those guys. Right.
I would like it, you know, see if he, I mean, the thing that I've been impressed with Austin Reeves is that he's defended.
Yeah.
You know, cause he didn't really defend at Oklahoma, but he's defending right now.
Didn't defend at all, but he's trying now. The Lakers, it feels
I mean, it's amazing when you know you have to defend this to get into the NBA.
Yeah.
So that's another thing.
By the way, right now, Cole Anthony, we have 4 minutes, 30 seconds left.
Killing my Knicks.
4 minutes, 30 seconds left in the third quarter. They're up one.
Destroying us.
Cole Anthony has 25 points on 9 of 14 shooting. He has 13 rebounds.
He is absolutely killing us right now. Just killing us.
Some DFS, there's no way that he was high in DFS models today. Whoever picked Cole Anthony for their DFS lineup is just making a shit ton of money right now. Like, what is happening?
Just absolutely destroying us. But that's fine. Let's go Knicks. Anyway, I think the Lakers are a real contender. I think they're going to get this stuff together. There's just too much talent there.
I agree.
And at the end of the day, you just have to believe in LeBron and Anthony Davis. Like, you have to believe that duo is going to figure it out. But it's been fun talking about them. And you know, if they lose on Sunday night to Memphis, while Memphis is on the LA back-to-back, the LA nightlife back-to-back, you know it's going to be hilarious. like Twitter, it's gonna be absolutely hilarious.
Oh my god, I can't. Like, I think they're gonna be fine long term, but they have some real structural issues they need to figure out. Like, they have some real problems that they need to navigate and they need to experiment with early in the season. And I think that they are. Like, Frank Vogel very clearly is experimenting. Like, he closed the first game with Avery Bradley, who he signed off the street, like, or signed off waivers, I guess, not necessarily off the street, literally that week. He closed the second game with Austin Reeves. Like, it feels like Vogel is trying different shit, and I feel like that has to be the first month and a half for the Lakers. Just throw a bunch of shit at the wall, see what sticks. They're going to get back Wayne Ellington at some point. They're going to get back Talen Horton Tucker at some point, hopefully. I know he has a torn ligament in his thumb.
Trevor Ariza.
Great. Yeah, Trevor Ariza had ankle surgery. They're going to get back Kendrick Nunn at some point in the next few weeks, probably. So this team's going to change, but I think that they need to experiment just while the team changes, I guess, is where I'm at.
Right. Well, I mean, the problem is that the issues are structural. So there's not like the roster is, I mean, the roster is who you have it. So you have to at some point make it work with what you have. I would probably think about starting Carmelo Anthony because you need another shooter and another spacer in the lineup. No matter if he's making 20% of his shots or not, he's going to get guarded out there. So you're going to have space. So that's one change I would think about making.
The fact that he actually gets guarded is a big deal for them.
Yeah, he gets guarded. So if you have LeBron at the 3, Carmelo at the 4, oh, geez, wait a minute. Anthony doesn't want to play. See, that's the problem. That's the other problem. Anthony Davis doesn't want to play the 5. So
I mean, he's gonna have
going two bigs.
He's gonna have to,
but he doesn't. They're starting two bigs, so that means you'd have to play LeBron at the 2 and Carmelo at the 3. So yeah, that probably doesn't work.
Yeah.
Oof.
But this again, see, though, like this.
So
is
many
time
things could be alleviated. So many things could be alleviated if Anthony Davis would just be like, "Yo, I'll go to the 5."
Right.
So many things. Like you can alleviate. You can run a whole bunch of Russ AD pick and roll because there'll be space. You'd have LeBron at the 4 or LeBron at the 3, Carmelo at the 4. You put Malik Monk at the 2 and Russ at the 1, and you have shooting.
Yeah.
And stop playing Rondo and Russell Westbrook together. Please, stop doing that.
Just stop.
Just don't do it.
Yeah.
There's no reason for those guys to be on the floor together, ever. Ever.
No, that's 100% right.
At the same time.
It's absolutely right. Okay, let's take a quick commercial break and we'll be back. Okay, let's go to the Bucks. I saved the Bucks despite the fact that they are the reigning champion and look great, other than that game against Miami where they didn't have Brooke Lopez, didn't have Drew Holiday. Like, I'm just not worried about that. Like, they look like a team that has played together for the last few years and is going to continue to be awesome. Like, I don't know what more to say about Milwaukee right now. Like, they just look good.
They look like, to me, the best team in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah.
Which I don't understand why they weren't looked at that way before, because I thought they earned it. By the way, Giannis has gotten better, and that's scary.
Maybe that is where to have this conversation, because Giannis does look better. He's shooting the hell out of the ball. Or not even shooting the hell out of it, but he looks a lot more confident shooting the ball.
And the other thing about Giannis, he's playing slower. Not slower in terms of, you know, sheer pace. He's playing slower in the half court. Like, the game is slowed down for him even more.
Yeah.
Like, he's playing the spots. He's not just trying to bulldoze his way to the rim anymore. Yeah. If he gets to a guy that can play to spots consistently, or dare I say, if he gets a bag, I just wanted to throw that in there.
Good God.
That's legitimately scary. That's terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if he's actually able to walk into pull-up jumpers, I do think he actually is the best player in the world. If he can walk into pull-up jumpers, given the way that defenders...
And he has so far.
But just given the way defenders have to play him, you can't play him tight because he's stronger than you and he's longer than you. Like, if they... Like, I don't know what you do against him, I guess is my point, if he can walk into pull-up jumpers. But, like, he doesn't even need a bag because of how good he is in transition. Like, you have to just load up 5 feet away from him in order to stop him in transition. So if he can just stop and walk into a jumper, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter at that point. In terms of things that are slightly different, Grayson Allen, I think, looks like a smart addition. I know he's shooting 27% from three, but he's a very confident shooter that will help them. Jordan Wara looks much better than what we've seen in the past from Jordan Wara.
Oh my God, I love Jordan Wara. Where were we on him at draft time?
I didn't really like him, like, because I didn't think he would ever defend.
We were like so-so on him, weren't we?
Yeah, I liked Sam Merrill more than him, who the Bucks obviously moved for Grayson Allen. Yeah. I was wrong. Like, Jordan clearly has a lot of game, and he's 6'7 and can shoot. But I just never in a million years believed he would defend. I still am questionable if he'll defend in the biggest moments, but the signs are promising. I would say that Jordan Wara can be a legit rotation player on the Bucks.
So I really like Jordan Wara now. I'm not sure I liked him coming out of the draft. I really like Sam Merrill.
Yeah.
And I wish the Bucks would have kept him, and I wish – I hope that Memphis starts playing him at some point.
I want to see him.
That's just like my Sam Merrill take.
Yeah, I think they actually wanted him. Like, you don't move Grayson Allen for him unless you want him, right?
Well, they definitely like wanted him. Player. They cut Chris Dunn for him, and Chris Dunn had a $5 million guarantee. Yeah. So they ate $5 million to keep him on the roster. So they clearly want him.
Right. Yeah, no, this is the Bucks are an interesting team insofar as I feel like
go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, like, I think they're probably the East favorites unless Brooklyn gets Kyrie back is where I'm at.
I think they're the least flawed team in the NBA.
We're going to talk about a team that's very close to you that I think might be the least flawed team in the NBA. But I think that the Milwaukee Bucks are probably number two for me in that respect.
Jazz are the least flawed team in the league?
Yeah, we'll talk about it in a minute here when we get to the West. But let's close out the East here. The 76ers, I mean, the key flaw is simply who runs pick and roll for the 76ers right now?
Tyrese Maxey. Love him.
Yes.
Wait a minute. Let me go check the Oklahoma City game and see who's running pick and roll for him right now.
So
there was a lot of it was a lot of Korkmaz.
That's what I was going to say. I think that Korkmaz might actually be like their best pick and roll playmaker. Tyrese is good, and like Tyrese is definitely up there. It might be Korkmaz. Like they're running like point Kork and point Max at this point, and that feels concerning to me. As someone who wants the best for this 76ers team.
Would you trade Ben Simmons for John Wall?
No, I would not.
You would not trade Ben Simmons for John Wall and three first-round draft picks?
It would depend on what kind of protections we're talking about on the picks, but given that I don't think Houston would want to make those, like, I would think Houston would top five protect those picks. I just don't see that as like as an outcome that would be feasible for me.
Because I think John Walker helped Philly.
Yeah, maybe. Depends on how much you think John Wall has in the tank. What do you think he has?
I mean, I think he has enough in the tank to help Philly.
But like the key in a Simmons trade,
he doesn't have to be the number one. He doesn't have to be the number one or number two option. He just needs to help.
I mean, yes, John Wall would help. But like the key in a Simmons trade is maximizing that help, right? Like John Wall, there are definitely better options out there than John Wall, right?
Okay, but you're not getting those better options. Like if you call Portland and say, give me CJ McCollum, Portland's not going to do it right now. The man's trade value is torpedoed.
Yeah. There has to be someone out there. It's kind of like where I'm at. Like there's just got to be. But so like, would you rather have John Wall or D'Angelo Russell? Like you'd probably rather D'Angelo Russell plus whatever Minnesota would also throw in, right?
I'm not sure, man. I think John Wall, even in his post-Achilles, post-30-year-old state, I think he makes people better around him with his passing.
I mean, here's another name.
Embiid on your team.
would Toronto do Fred VanVleet and just continue to add to their group of 6'7" to 6'10"
wings,
like
cannot
ball
shoot.
Skills defender combination players.
So so Toronto would trade for Ben Simmons. They'd have Ben Simmons, OG, Scottie Barnes, and they'd have to play every game 82-78.
Siakam and Achiuwa, who are also fitting this mold. And yeah. Delano
Benton. Every game will be 82-78.
Yeah. I'm not saying it's a good idea here, by the way. I'm just saying, like, he fits the player type that Toronto likes.
Goran Dragic would be in hell. My man would be kicking out to everybody who would just be pump faking and attacking. Goran Dragic would average 2 assists a game.
Oh, man. And the funny thing is, like, what Ben Simmons brings in terms of, like, passing and playmaking is that he's really good on kickout passes, and now he'd just be kicking out to, like,
pumping ghosts. That's what he'd be kicking out to.
Yeah, really would. Yeah, look, again, like, I don't think it's a good idea. I'm just saying, like, do you think Toronto would do something like that? Like, knowing that Toronto, like, probably cares about wins a little bit this year, but cares way more about, like, upside and, like, having a team that could win a title at some point.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it was funny. I mean, you know, I knew this was going to – I don't want to say I knew this was going to happen, but, I mean, it was – it's hard giving Fred VanVleet that kind of contract, because as good as Fred is, like, he's got to be a cog. He's not. He can't be the. It's just hard being that small.
I think Fred. Really, I think that deal's fine. I think that that's a great deal for Toronto. It, like, if they wanted to move him, they could move him for something, like, great immediately, I think.
So would you move him for Ben Simmons if you were Toronto?
I wouldn't. Because I think they already have, like, I just wouldn't build my roster in the way that Masai and Bobby Webster seem to be doing it. I wouldn't want all of Siakam, OG, Ben Simmons, Scottie Barnes, like, all, I wouldn't want, like, all of those guys on my roster at once. But, like, if it's something like I'm also sending Siakam somewhere else. Like, am I sending Siakam to Golden State and getting back, like, Moody, you know, Kuminga, and, like, so, like, a, you know, bringing in another team to get a guard or something like that? Like, there's probably a world where I would do it, but it would involve a lot of maneuvering, I would say.
Right, right.
On the back end.
I like Philly. I like what they have. You know, I think Embiid is one of the best players in the league, one of the very best players in the league. They got to do something, because you can't, like, Embiid is not, does not strike me as a guy who's going to be Joel Embiid at 35 years old. So you just can't waste one of his years.
Yeah.
Like, you got to start maximizing. He's in his prime right now. You got to maximize it. What is he, 27?
Might even be a little bit older than that, but let's go with 27. Yeah,
he's 27 years old. He's you got to maximize his prime. Like right now, he's
he's 27. He's turns 28 this year. Yeah, at some point
he turns 28 this year. This basketball season.
Yep.
Oof. Yeah, you can't play. You can't. They got to get out of this game of chicken. They got to do something, because, like, you are. At this point, you know, you're smack in the middle of his prime, and you got to maximize it. You really do.
Yeah, and it's, I think that what they're waiting for is to see where the dust settles in, like, closer to the deadline and around, like, December 15th, when everyone can be moved, right? Like, and honestly, like, I'm comfortable with that. Like, I think that that is the way to handle it, but I wouldn't get past the deadline with Simmons if I was Philly. I don't think, like, Daryl said that he was willing to wait X number. He's willing to wait 4 years if that's what it takes. I personally wouldn't let it get past the deadline, but that's just me.
Yeah. You can't do that. You know, I mean, just right now you have one of the 10 best players in basketball.
Yeah.
And he's in the middle of his prime. You've got to maximize his prime. You got to give them every chance to win a championship. And like you said, this year is wide open. It's wide open. You don't have that dominant team this year.
Yep. I think that's right. Like you need to go for it if you're Philly.
I do not want to disrespect Trae Young. I want to talk about Atlanta because I think they're really good.
We do need to talk about Atlanta because I think Atlanta is really, really good. And they're really good on both ends of the court now. Like, John Collins has become a legitimately really positional defender. And then you throw him next to DeAndre Hunter. And then you throw him next to Clint Capella, obviously, as well. John Collins has gotten so good at the aspects of defense in terms of just reading where he needs to go help, being disruptive, sliding his feet. He's gotten so much better at that than what he was coming into the NBA that, man, he's just an awesome, like, third best player, second best player to have around, I feel like, now.
I think that Atlanta might be 2 years away from being the dominant team in the NBA.
I don't think that's crazy. They would need to do one of two things. They would need like a real substantial leap from either DeAndre Hunter or Kevin Herter or Cam Reddish. Or they would need to package some of that talent into a superstar if it comes available.
I wouldn't package a thing. I think Hunter is an all-star type of talent.
Yeah. If I was them, I would be looking at, like, maybe it's this offseason, maybe it's, like, at the deadline, you know, whenever the next star comes available. Like, I'd be looking at Cam Reddish, Kevin Herter, Jalen Johnson, and, like, firsts for a star. And I think that that's a big enough package to go get a star at this point.
Or you could just keep them and have insane depth around Trae Young.
It's really hard to keep all those guys, though, because they're all going to get paid.
Well, you've already paid John.
Yep.
Well, that's why I said in the next 2 years. So you got to you have to do it in the next 2 years.
Yeah.
The guy that would have to go for me in order to keep those guys would be Capella, because you have Okongwu, and I think Okongwu can be Capella.
Yeah. You have to hope so, at least, yeah. Man, Onyeka, I would love to see him get healthy.
He's good. I think he's good. I think he's really good. He's not as long as Capella is, but he's got the same, I mean, the same exact instincts and stuff.
Yeah. I will say this. This is a team that, if we're talking, we've kind of based this whole podcast around the idea of weaknesses, right? I don't really know what their weaknesses, like, on the court are. They just might not have enough talent yet. Like, they just might not be there.
Their weakness is experience.
Yeah.
Like, they're just not old enough. But I mean, you know, you've got dynamic. Well, the weakness might be you don't have a second dynamic playmaker.
Yeah. That might be. Yeah.
That's probably it. Like, if you're against the clock and you don't have, and if you're against the clock and Trae doesn't have the ball, your secondary creator is Bogdanovich.
Yeah.
Who's okay. You know, he's okay. Or, you know, Gallo pump faking and hoping you jump, or Hunter or Herter.
That's the crazy thing. They haven't even had Gallinari, like Lou Williams hasn't played yet. Okongwu hasn't played yet. This team is insane.
Like, they're so deep. They're super deep. It's ridiculous.
It's laughable how deep this team is. Like, they have so many. Like, you just can't pay all those guys. Like, I think there's going to have to be a consolidation trade at some point. Maybe it's like moving someone out to get future picks because you want to keep maintaining depth year over year. But, like, you're going to have to move someone at some point. Like, you can't just keep all these guys. But, like, yeah, right now I think their secondary creator is probably Bogdan. We didn't get to see, like, full-scale Bogdan in the playoffs last year either because he was hurt.
Right.
So I really wonder if he is going to be good enough to at least, like, hold that fort down next to Trae. But you have Trae. Like, Trae is probably – I don't know if he's, like, a top – he might be, like, a top 10 player in terms of the playoffs right now. Like, guys that I would take for playoff game tomorrow, because there's not really an easy way to stop him with the way that the game gets ramped up in the playoffs.
Yeah, when I saw what he was doing to Ben Simmons, I was like, okay, I'm sold. That's silly.
Yeah.
I mean, he legit had Ben crying in the press. Ben was like, well, I hope they let me play a little bit more physically on him. Like, okay. Well, that means he's cooking you in space.
And he's cooking Ben Simmons in space. And Ben is a great defender. Like,
yeah.
Oh, man. I just don't know what you do with him out of ball screens in the playoffs. He has an incredible floater game. He can pull up from the mid-range. He can pull up from 28 feet. He's an exceptional passer if you try to put two on the ball. He's tough. He's so tough. He's a great lob thrower. Like, he just finds the right decision every time. And I'll say this too. I've watched both their games. He's trying harder on defense this year. And he's like actually working on defense this year in a real substantial
way. Well, Rubio cooked him last night though.
Rubio didn't really cook him. Rubio hit like a bunch of threes.
I don't know. No, Sam, fourth quarter.
No.
Rubio was cooking him.
I didn't think so. I didn't think that was on Trey. I thought that was
he was cooking them.
I thought that was just Ricky hitting shots.
I mean, okay. So, like, is the premise different? If I'm staying in front of my guy and he's making shots, he's still cooking me.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. You're not wrong. Look, like, you're 100% right. But, like, he hit, like, three threes at the end of the first half and had, like, a bunch of points early. And then, like, later in the
game.
He closed. Damn it.
Yeah. He closed. He was Fever Rick.
Yeah. Okay, I'll say this. Trey is trying.
He wasn't NBA Rick.
Trey's trying harder.
But, okay, so here's the thing, right? Like, the best thing the Hawks have done, like, the best thing Travis has done is he did what the Warriors did for Stephen Curry, which is they put enough around those two that guy. They put enough around him defensively to where his defense doesn't really matter.
Yeah,
like it matters, but it doesn't, because at the end of the day, you got Capella protecting the rim. He's an excellent rim protector. You got John Collins, who's a great defender, or who's becoming a great defender. You've got Reddish and Hunter, who are really good defenders. You've got Herter, who's you know, a 6'8", 2 guard. I mean, you've got there's defenders like all around him.
Yeah.
So it's I don't want to say it's made Trey's defense obsolete, but it certainly made it matter a lot less.
I think that's reasonable.
Like Donovan Mitchell's defense matters for the Jazz. They don't have the personnel around them to where it doesn't matter.
That's true, because they don't have the foot speed around him. Yeah.
Right.
Well, let's go to the West. We've talked for an hour now about the East. I haven't watched Miami yet, to be honest, so I don't want to like dive too deep into Miami.
Yeah. Plus, Lowry hasn't played, or a lot, at least.
Yeah, he played the first game. He didn't play the second game. Yeah.
Right, right.
I can't speak well enough about Miami at this point to talk about them. Let's go to the West, because I want to talk about your team. I do want to transition to the Jazz, because I think that they are the most complete team to me right now, and maybe that is a regular season thing, but they have a lot more. Like, I think the Eric Paschal like pickup really actually helped them. Because they needed like another wing-sized energy guy. And like, he's strong, he's physical, he's tough. Like, he gives them another option. They're obviously so well-schooled at generating three-pointers that it doesn't matter. They've shot like 33% from three in these two games so far. And it just doesn't matter, because they're so good at creating those looks that they're just going to create so many of them that they're going to make shots at a level that it's fine. And then defensively, obviously, they're fine. Like, they're great defensively. So, like, in a regular season context, this team, I think, is probably the most complete team in the league. I just don't know what to do with them, like, come playoff time necessarily, because I think they need more wing defense. But right now, they're the most complete team to me.
So, I think this is the best Jazz team. I mean, you know, I've been watching the league forever. This is the best Jazz team I've seen since 1998. And this is the team, the Jazz team that I think has the best chance at the title since 98. The game changer for me with this Jazz team, I think, and not many people are talking about this, but I think Rudy Gay can be a game changer for this team.
Hasn't played yet, but I think that you're right that he hasn't played definitely yet. Can be.
And I really starting to agree with you about Pascal because of like I've seen like I think he gives them a toughness that kind of wasn't there last year a little bit. You know, for instance, you know, in past years there have been teams that have been capable of punking the Jazz, and Sacramento was doing so last year. Not last year, on Friday, and Pascal and Hassan Whiteside, they turned the game around physically. Like, you know, they kind of stood up to those guys a little bit. And I really, really loved what Pascal really provided to Jazz in that game. Because that was a physical game. That was a team that was good enough and physical enough to take them take the Jazz out of their sets a little bit. They were running up and down the floor. They were speeding the Jazz up. Davion Mitchell was basically stuck in Donovan Mitchell's jersey, and you know the Jazz had to win that game on something else more than their ball movement and their shooting. And they won it on their physicality. And there haven't been a lot of Jazz teams that I've covered that have just been like, okay, we're just going to, you know, you're kicking the shit out of us right now. We're just going to kick the shit out of you back. And that's what they did to Sacramento. And I was really impressed with that.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. Like, it's so funny that, like, Davion Mitchell right now is averaging 2.5 points. He shot 14% from the field. I think he's like 2 for 14 so far this year.
And I would have him first team all rookie in a heartbeat.
Yes. Yes, I would too. He has completely changed the way that they play. They are now a physical team. In the two games I watched from them, they are now a physical team because of him.
Like, it's ridiculous. I don't wanna say he might be the best on ball defender in the NBA, like right now.
Last year it felt like the Kings had some talent, but it was kind of easy to play them. It is not easy to play them anymore. Like, Davion Mitchell will just stick in your best player's jersey the entire game. Alex Len is, like, physical, at least. Like, Rashawn Holmes, ask him to go play tough, he'll go play tough. Harrison Barnes is, like, physical in the way that he uses his body on the court. And then they also went out and got Tristan Thompson, who, yeah, he's only playing 12 minutes a night. But, like, those are physical minutes, though. Like, this is now not a super easy team to play. And I think that given that Davion Mitchell's playing 28 minutes a night, whereas, like, Tristan's playing 12 minutes. And, you know, Harrison Barnes, like, he's more just, like, he's not initiating the physicality. He's just big and is capable of like absorbing contact. Like, to me, it's Davion that has like kind of changed the way that they do things. I mean, he's tough. And that was an impressive win. Like, you wouldn't think that, oh yeah, like the Kings, they won 34 games or whatever last year. They're on the rise. You know, Utah should still beat them pretty easily. I'm with you. That was an impressive win, I thought, from Utah. I was really, really impressed the way that they fought and just dealt with how Sacramento really made a concerted effort to try to, like, punk them, it felt like.
And, you know, it was, you know, the thing was that last year the Jazz were swept by the Minnesota Timberwolves 3-0 in the season series. And it was one of those... And the formula was, we're going to be really physical. We're going to get into your ball handlers. We're not going to allow any of the screen roll action. We're going to switch everything, and we're just going to take you out of everything that you do. And then when we take you out of everything you do, we're going to run. we're going to get up and down the floor and we're going to beat you in transition. And, you know, that turned out to be the formula that the Clippers used to beat the Jazz.
Yeah. Yeah, it did. It really did.
You know, so, yeah, it's, you know, seeing them against Sacramento, that was the first time that, you know, this year you saw a team try to do that. And the Jazz really responded well. You know, I'm with you. I think that the Jazz and the Suns are the two best teams in the West. I would probably put Milwaukee and Brooklyn on tier one right now. I'd put the Jazz, the Lakers, and the Suns slightly below in tier two. But for me, those are the five teams that I look at that have the best chance of winning a title.
I like the Suns a lot as well. Let's talk about them. Where are you at on Phoenix at this point? I feel I like they're them. Just very they're really complete. Good. Yeah, like it's just hard.
Yeah.
They're just a very difficult team right now. It's hard to find the weakness.
That it's hard to find a weakness with them. Now the concern is, you know, Chris Paul had uncommon health last year. So, you know, does he stay as healthy as he stayed last year? So that's the question. But even if he doesn't, I mean, good Lord, you know, Cam's been so good on the point. That's just been ridiculous. And, you know, Mikal Bridges, to me, is the best 3-and-D player in the league. Devin Booker is Devin Booker. DeAndre Ayton is phenomenal. They have a lot of depth. I do wonder against better teams how much missing Saric is going to hurt them. Because I thought Saric was really, really good in that second unit, especially the way he could shoot the ball and the way they like to space. So you're plugging JaVale McGee into that. And, you know, there are some advantages, but there are some disadvantages there as well. But overall, I just think the Suns are really good.
Yeah, I think the Suns are really good as well. They can defend the perimeter. They can shoot. They have multiple elite level shot creators in Booker and Paul. Everything that they do offensively builds off of itself. So like they run those like horn sets, for instance, and there are like eight different ways they can kill you within those sets. They can throw the ball to Ayton. They can then have Mikhail on the other elbow, and they can run like a dribble handoff for Mikhail as Chris Paul like goes to the other corner, and then Mikhail can then stand on the wing. Devin Booker can fly up and take a dribble handoff that way, and there are like eight different things you can do off of that. Everything that they do builds off of itself, and on top of that, they're also good defensively. Because Devin Booker is like trying now on defense, and Chris Paul is a great point guard defender and floor general on that end who calls out so many different things. DeAndre Ayton's a really good defender now. Like Mikal Bridges is going to make the all defense team this year. There's just so many different ways that they can beat you and they can stay in games. Then like Portland comes out and destroys them the other night. And the Suns right now are sitting at 1-2. And we're talking about them this way, despite the fact that they have lost like pretty rough. Like they lost by double digits to both Denver and Portland. But like, I still feel like when push comes to shove, it was pretty impressive. Like, I feel like they're the deepest team that I can see.
Yeah. I mean, I saw the Portland loss coming.
Yeah.
You know, pretty far away, because it was like, you know, they were in Los Angeles the night before. They had an emotional win. Then you got to go up to Portland and play the Blazers. That's not the easiest thing to do. Who'd they lose to in game one?
Denver.
Oh, that's right. They did lose to Denver at home too.
Yeah, no, Denver came out and like really kind of set the tone. And like, that's the other thing about Denver, man. And we can transition to them. Like, that team is tough.
Jokic is insane.
Jokic
is insane.
They've just built a group of like guys that I trust to figure shit out on the court. Like, they're all smart, but they're all super tough. Like, even someone like PJ Dozier, like, he embodies a lot of what Denver is to me. Like, really tough defender, knows what his role is, doesn't try and do too much, and then makes it makes it work for them, right? Like, he's perfect within their scheme. He's a good cutter. He can run like side pick and rolls. He's now an okay shooter. You'd like to see him continue on the shooting run that he started the year on, but we'll see, right? Getting Will Barton back has been really helpful for them. So they're just a team like I wouldn't want to play in the playoffs. Like I that team feels like they will just like to Dan Campbell it, they're gonna like scratch your kneecap off before like losing the series.
Yeah, like they're the team that I'm like that I would, if I were a top seed, I'd be like, just go ahead and get one of the top four seeds so we don't have to see each of the second round.
Yeah.
We don't want that pressure in the first round. No. But you know, they're tough. You know, they're a good team. You know, they really are. So I mean, and like you said, you know, in Jokic makes it all work. He's insane. That pass that he made to MPJ in the corner, my God.
He threw a submarine like sidearm screwball through like a 1 degree open passing angle. I literally watched that 15 times and I still didn't understand how he did it. He literally almost hit MPJ in the nuts from like the opposite post.
And like MPJ like turns and he's like, oh my God, the ball is here. I guess I better shoot this thing.
Yeah.
He didn't even get an assist out of it.
Oh my God. He got the putback, which was nice, but yeah, it was incredible. It was one of the craziest passes I think I've ever seen in my life. Yeah, I would not want to play Denver. And then they have Aaron Gordon too, by the way. And like Aaron Gordon has sacrificed a lot since getting to Denver in terms of like numbers, in terms of role, usage with the ball in his hands. And he's just been happy to do it. Like he's the perfect guy to have on that team. He is embraced being like the tough guy, the physical guy on defense.
Yeah. And, you know, I like their bench. Always like PJ, always like Monte and Faco. I mean, they just got a bunch of guys. It's, you know, and they're really well coached. I mean, they're just a really, really good team.
Yeah, speaking of guys who will, like, scratch your kneecap off, Faku. Like, Campazzo is, like, the guy who embodies that as well. I mean, just a – it's a fun team. Let's take another quick commercial. Well, go ahead before we go.
Good anecdote. I told Donovan – I was talking to Donovan Mitchell on Friday night, and I said, you got Lou Dort in game one, you got Davion Mitchell in game two, and you're going to get Faku in game three. And he was just like, man, that's rough. You know, it's just kind of funny. It was just kind of funny to say, it's just to have that interaction.
Well, and like, I feel like Faku doesn't have that reputation. And I don't even know how like effective Faku is on defense, right? Because like you can still shoot over the top of him. And like, he's just small. So like, he's not crazy helpful unless he's shooting passing lanes in help. So like, I don't even know how incredible he is on defense. He's just
on the ball, he's great on the ball.
Miserable person to play against. Yeah, like
he's just great on the
ball.
So
miserable.
And he picks you up 94 feet. Like, he moves his feet. He's got incredible lateral quickness. And, you know, he's always under you. That's the thing. Like, players don't like when guys are under them, and he's under everybody.
Yeah.
So, really, yeah, that's the part that's hard to play against with him.
And by the way, that's the same with Davion, too. Like, Davion just like gets up under you in like a pretty real way.
Yeah. And Davion doesn't die on screens. That's the thing that I love about him.
That's true, too. That's a very good point. Let's take another quick commercial break, and we'll be back to close out on some of these other teams in the West. Okay. Still here with Tony Jones. What other teams in the West do you want to talk about? Because you think it's pretty wide open in the West. We've gotten to The King, or we've talked about the Kings a reasonable amount, weirdly. But we've talked about Phoenix. We've talked about Denver. We've talked about Utah. We've talked about the Lakers so far. Do you want to talk about the Clippers? Do you want to talk about Dallas? Like, what other, should we talk about Golden State? Cause I think they're actually really interesting in this conversation.
Oh yeah. Let's talk about, I mean, obviously Golden State is, I think Golden State might be in the top four when it's all said and done
in the West.
I really like them. Yeah.
Yeah. I think so too, like, depending on what Clay looks like when he's healthy. Yeah.
They have a bunch of wings. They are very athletic. Steph is still playing at prime level. Jordan, the Jordan Poole, ascension is real. They're going to get Clay back. They're really good and they're a headache to play against.
That feels like a good combination. And part of the reason that they're a headache to play against now is not only are they tough on defense, but they're smart on defense too.
Nobody talked about Bielitsa, but he's been a real impact signing for them. And especially in terms of him being able to play, you know, their ability to go five out with him at the five, he's been a real, real good addition for them.
Yeah, I kind of talked about that on the opener podcast I did, but I feel like his ability to make decisions on the move is a perfect fit for them, like for everything they want to do at the five. Like, he can just run short rolls with Draymond Green, and he finds cutters, he finds open kickouts. Like, he's just a smart player with the ball in his hands. It's a perfect fit. Like, Otto Porter hasn't really even done much so far, and I hope he can, like, stay healthy, and if he can make some shots and be smart defensively. But, like, he gives them an upside play. Andre Iguodala has been good so far. Like, I was worried that the clock had run out on Iggy, but it has not. He's pretty good, I think.
He looks spry. He looks downright spry.
Yeah.
Like, he's been jumping. He's moving. I mean, they just have a lot. They have a lot of guys. They have a lot of depth. I did not believe in the Warriors in the offseason. Then I saw them constructed in the preseason, and I changed my tune on them.
Yep.
Pretty 180. I thought they were like, oh, yeah, they're going to be much the same. And then, you know, when you see it on the floor and you see how they're constructed, I was just like, yeah, this looks really good together.
Like, a lot of the teams that we've seen play well so far, and this is something I keep talking about, I think that continuity is a really important thing. Like, Memphis is 2-0. Charlotte's 2-0. They didn't really have, like, crazy additions. Memphis traded Jonas for Steven Adams, but they still have, like, 90% of their core there. The Warriors are 2-0. The Jazz are 2-0. Minnesota is 2-0. And again, like, they didn't do anything really this offseason. Denver is 2-0. They didn't do a ton this offseason. The Knicks are 2-0. They added a lot, but, like, the core pieces of who they are still there, right? So continuity, Milwaukee's 2-1, right? Like, continuity is always a really important thing early in the season, unless you're the Bulls and you just might be, like, really good. And I don't know how to, like, even manage them yet. Part of my guess on them is that they've played Detroit twice, and that makes life a little bit easier.
And New Orleans once.
So, like, we'll see what it looks like later this week. Like, they have to play at Toronto, which will be an interesting one. They have to play the Knicks, and then they have to play Utah late in the week, which I think will be a really good game and a really good test for them. But
the Jazz have at Chicago and at Milwaukee back to back.
Yeah, it's not great. That's not fun. I think you go for the win. If you're trying to split those, which Utah should be in their situation, I think you go for the win against Chicago and then kind of, like, let it roll against Milwaukee, right?
Well, Milwaukee's also going to be on a back-to-back.
Okay. Interesting. That'll be a fun little thing to track, because there's definitely a betting edge there. I know that. I just need to find it.
Yeah. So, I like the Clippers despite their 0-2 start. I particularly like them if they get, yo, Cole Anthony's line was 29, 16, and 8 tonight.
I don't know what happened, man.
I just want to say that.
I mean, I do know what happened. Like, Cole Anthony went home and locked in.
And Cole went home. Cole was like, I'm going to perform tonight.
This is homecoming for him. Wow. He wanted it.
But, you know, if the Clippers get Kawhi back at the right time, man, like, this, the nightmare scenario for the Jazz is that the Clippers get the 8th seed and they get Kawhi back.
Yeah, really, isn't it? That's it. Because they've looked good.
Yeah.
Like, I do think they've looked good. I know that they're 0-2, yeah, like you said, but they lost a tough one to Memphis, and they lost a really tough one to Golden State in their opener. Like, Paul George looks like he's ready to try and, like, finish top five in the MVP race. And they're using Eric, yeah, Bledsoe in really creative ways. And Zubats, I think, has started the season really well from the center position from a defensive perspective. And then on top of it, like, I just love Terrence Mann. The more I watch Terrence Mann, the more I just love everything about what that guy stands for. And I loved him pre-draft. So he is awesome.
I think that Ty Lue is a hell of a coach. And I think that, you know, his real skill is that he knows how to take a player, identify his strengths, and more importantly, identify his weaknesses, and put that guy in position to where he's maximizing his strengths while minimizing his weaknesses. Like, you look at what he's done with Marcus Morris. Mm-hmm. He's like, okay, we're going to always have you in the corners because that's where you shoot the best. And we're also not going to take away the 15-foot post-ups that you're really efficient at.
Yep.
Because that's, you know, something that you do really well. You know, another coach would be like, well, analytics, just stand in the corner, shoot threes.
Right.
You know, so.
Well, and I think that the better example of that this year is Eric Bledsoe. Like, we, I talked about this on the podcast that I did with Danny LaRue, and I love the way that they utilized Eric Bledsoe in the first game against the Warriors. I only watched like probably a quarter of their game against Memphis. I didn't, like, you know, really sit there and study it. It was like the second game I had on, like, in the background. But I love the way that they're utilizing Bledsoe almost in like a Bruce Brown, like, screener role, a reasonable amount, and like saying, you know what? We know teams don't respect him as a shooter. We're going to try and find creative ways to get him the ball in the paint. Sometimes it'll be as a pick and roll guy. Sometimes it'll be as a short roll guy. But we're going to find ways for him to be effective and to use his athleticism.
Yeah. And, you know, and he's looked really good. You know, everybody's like, well, you know, Eric Bledsoe is done. He's, you know, he's not great anymore. And then, you know, and it's like, oh, well, Ty Lue's put him in positions to where he can help. I just really like what he's been able to do with his roster, and Paul George has been terrific, just absolutely terrific.
Yeah, he's really good. Paul George, hot take, really, really good basketball player, especially like when he feels like he has to carry it a little bit. And like, look, like, Paul, the problem was that Paul George got, like, he had a phenomenal first game, I thought, against the Warriors. And all anyone could talk about was him getting clowned from the logo by Steph.
Yeah.
And, like, look, don't say I'm from the logo with it to Stephen Curry. Like, that's just a bad idea waiting to happen.
It's just, I was not smart.
Yeah, like, Paul George could definitely do a better job of reading the room. But also, Paul George is really fucking good. He is so good at basketball. Every time I watch him, I'm just like, you are unbelievable at basketball.
He has no weakness in his game. Mm-mm. Like, he doesn't have a weakness. Davion Mitchell's got like 15 points.
Good for Davion.
Like 5 minutes. Remember when we were talking about his stats?
Yeah.
Welp.
And like, we weren't even talking about him negatively. We were just like, yeah, he's averaging like
yeah,
2.5 points a game, and we put him on first team all rookie.
And his defense is so good that it doesn't matter. And Davion was like, well, I'm just going to go ahead and play offense tonight.
Oh, my God. 6 of 7 from the field. Yeah, what a stud. Davion's really good.
He's like 4 for 4 from three.
Oh, my God. Shout out Davion Mitchell. What a stud. All right. Is there anywhere else we want to go before we get out of here? Anything you need to talk about?
No, we got to talk about Dallas.
Oh, my God. I'll say this for Dallas. It took 6 quarters for one of two things to happen. For Jason Kidd to either figure out, oh, I just need to run high ball screens with Luka every play because that's what he's good at and that's what makes our team best. Or it took 6 quarters for Luka to say, fuck this, I'm just going to do my thing and you guys can follow or not.
Right. Right.
And I don't know which one it was. Like, I'm not in Dallas to know. But, like, there was a clear change, like, at the end of the second quarter in their Toronto game, and then all through the second half. They just were like, okay, we're going to just get back to running high ball screens for Luka, and it's going to work.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. And they came back and won that game. And they were really good. What are your thoughts on Dallas as a team?
I don't really see them as a contender. I see them as like a good team that I probably wouldn't love playing in the playoffs because Luka is so good on any given night that I legit think that he can win like 4 games by himself in a playoff series. So I would not want to play them, but do I think they can win a title? I don't. To be honest, like, I don't think that they can win 16, like, with just Luka. And the big part of it is that I don't know if I trust Porzingis to do what he has to do for them to be as good as they can be.
I do think that he's been helped by the move to the four, because then you can just be a rim protector and not have to be a pick and roll anchor. He is awful in the pick and roll
defensively. Sort of, but like teams will still target him. Like they're not doing it now because like teams are just like kind of experimenting right now. But in the playoffs, like teams are still going to do that to him. Like regardless if he's at the 4 or the 5, like they're just going to send his guy to the ball for Luka or to the ball for whoever they're playing. Right. So I don't even know that it works, to be honest. Like I don't know that it, especially playing him with another big works, because it just ends up cluttering, especially if Jason Kidd is going to be insistent upon posting him, which he definitely was in game one. It didn't happen as often in game two, but like that's something I'm really looking forward to tracking early on in their season, is just like, are they going to post a real amount? Because it seemed like that was like a concerted effort thing to post up, because they did it quite a bit more than what I would have thought they would have. They're posting on almost like 10% of their possessions right now.
Right.
So like
that's probably too much, to be honest.
Let's see.
Luka needs to get in shape. Okay. So just run ball screens every possession.
Yeah. Yeah, right now they've posted the 8th most of any team in the NBA. That's bad for a team that has Luka Doncic. Please don't do that. I'm not asking a lot. Just don't do that, please.
So you're against that?
I am against that. I am completely and utterly against posting up a guy who, like, and I don't mean this negatively toward Kristaps necessarily, because I think he does a million other things really well, including shoot the ball from three, but like he can't establish his spot on the block where he wants to go because his center of gravity is too high. So guys like that you think he has a mismatch on, he doesn't actually have a mismatch on, because he gets any time that like he has to displace his momentum in order to like go and receive the ball and like jump toward the ball whenever he's taking an entry pass, like that guy just like pushes him further away from the basket. He'll get pushed like 4 more feet from the rim every time. So it's fine. Like he does a lot of other things really well. He protects the rim when he's around the rim. He is capable, at least, of you know, knocking down shots, and he hasn't done that like to a high level this year, but I think we all think Kristaps can shoot. So like, it's just frustrating to me to see someone be utilized in a way that he is not best utilized, I think is the fairest way to put it.
Right. I would try to run a bunch of pick and rolls with him.
Yep.
I would be like, let's actually roll to the basket though, instead of popping out to three, you know, mix it up though. Like, you know what I'm saying? That's the thing. Mix it up, you know, go to the basket, pop, stop, you know, cause right now, I mean, it's gotten to the point where he's easy to guard, cause you know what he's going to do, you know? And that's one of the reasons why for me, you know, analytics has its place, but it can't be the end all be all, because you got to be able to, you can't be predictable. You got to be able to make people guard you everywhere.
So I'm with that. I will say though, that like their best success against Toronto, and I don't have the numbers on this, but their best success against Toronto came with Dwight Powell setting screens and rolling.
Right.
So do you do that? Like, do you run more Dwight Powell out there? And then like put Kristaps like in the corner to shoot threes. It doesn't seem like he's real happy to do that. And certainly like you shouldn't pay him $30 million to do that. Right.
Right. You can stagger and you can put him in lineups where the ball is forced to him. Like for instance, I mean, you know, who needs a screen more, you know, Luka or Jalen Brunson.
Yeah.
You know, so you could put him on in lineups where Jalen's on the floor, and you know that could be lineups where he's dominant with the basketball. I mean, I'm just spitballing here.
Yeah, and like by the way, like we're shitting on him. Like I don't think he's this bad. Like I don't think he's a bad bass. Like I think he's actually really good. Yeah, like you can find a way to make it work.
Right.
Like the guy averaged 20 points a game each of the last 2 years with Dallas, right? Like, he's good.
Right.
Like, it's just when you're trying to optimize in order to win a title, I don't know exactly how you optimize him in lineups in order to win a title, I guess. I haven't figured that out yet personally.
Right.
And it seems like Dallas hasn't totally figured that out yet either, because if you listen to, do you listen to Pablo Torre's podcast with Bob Vulgaris?
No, I haven't.
It's really good. Like, I would suggest everyone go listen to it. It was really interesting, some of the stuff that they said about, like, trying to find the right lineups with Porzingis and trying to find, like, the right role for him. Like, one thing they did was put him in the corner, in large part because like Kawhi Leonard was guarding him and they just wanted Kawhi away from the screen with Luka. Like they just did everything they could to get Kawhi out of the action. Another thing that they did was like play him often. So, or like play him like on ball. So it's, you can do it. Like he's a really good basketball player. I just haven't figured out the right mix of things to utilize with him to make him his most effective. Especially post knee injuries, like pre knee injuries, he was a little bit more explosive and bouncier and a little bit more mobile. But, I think a critical thing for him would hopefully be getting some of that like juice in his knees back. Like if that can happen, it makes things a lot easier for Dallas, I think.
Right. That's facts.
Yeah.
I think Jay, what do you think of his rotations so far?
What do I think of Jason Kidd's rotations? I'll be honest, like I don't really look at that stuff early in the year. I'm more trying to just like evaluate players as much as anything, and evaluate like what players are working well. Guys, like guys come in, guys go out, and I'm watching so many different games that like I know who's on the court, but I don't know the order with which they're going off the court, if that makes sense.
That makes sense.
Do you have thoughts on them? Because I, like I said, like I just don't.
I just knew it was a conversation, you know, on Twitter, and you know, I just thought it was interesting.
Interesting. Yeah, I haven't seen that. You're a man of the people, Tony Jones. Like you're out there. You're talking to everyone.
I'm just not a man of the people. I'm just a person who my daughters are not impressed with.
you're out there, you're retweeting just about everyone, it feels like you, everyone's interacting with you. It's great. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta interact with people. You gotta talk to people. You know, I don't know a stranger.
I will say I've started not having my notifications bar up on like my Twitter stuff.
Uh-huh.
I will click specific tweets and see like what people are saying about them, and then like interact with people that way, as opposed to just like seeing every notification that comes up on my Twitter account. And it's been much healthier for me, I think, at this point. it's been a little bit better to not see everything that someone says about you.
To go away and count to 10 has been okay.
Yeah, that probably helps. But,
you know, somebody yesterday said, "Well, why, you know, why is my Twitter feed all BS Tony Jones tweets?" And my response to him was, "I have to entertain your 7 followers." So that was fun.
Yeah, I'm getting better at not responding to people like that. I'm getting better at it. I'm not 100% as good at it as I need to be.
The Lakers have 12 points in 8 minutes so far.
Yeah, it's not great on offense for them. It's really not.
At home to a team that's playing on the second night of a back-to-back. And you know they went out last night because they were in L.A.
You'd think so, but like I will say, like all those Memphis guys, like I don't think they're like getting after it. You know what I mean? Like I don't think that's their deal.
There are some cities. Listen, when I go to Miami next week, I'm going out.
I think that Memphis, the guys in Memphis, definitely went out. You'd think, but like I don't know. Like I don't get the impression the guys on that team are like, you know, getting after it. You know.
Yeah, they seem to be they strike me as basketball guys. They do strike me as bad, but there are some cities that you know you're just gonna go out.
All right, Tony. I think we got to call it in an hour 43 or so, like an hour 40. Do you have any great, like crazy draft takes you want to fire off real quick before we go?
No, because we have to do a draft. I am kind of on the Paolo train.
Yeah, Paolo's great.
Paolo's great.
But yeah, we'll do more of a dedicated draft one at some point.
Yeah, that's for sure.
We need the season to start because we're still like 2 weeks away, 2.5 weeks away. We need to see a little bit more, I think.
Chet is still my guy, though. It's just going to take him. I want Chet. My crazy draft take is that I think I want Chet and Poku on the same team.
Oh, I need it. I mean, that'd be great. I'm like in. That'd be the most fun scenario for me.
Yeah, and I want them running pick and roll with each other.
Oh, they could too. They definitely could.
Yeah, they could. They absolutely could.
Oh my god!
Like you'd have like a combined 200 pounds in that pick and roll.
We started on Poku and we're ending on Poku. I love it.
Yeah. 14 feet and 200 pounds of pick and roll between Poku and Chet Holmgren.
They legit, like, it would be 14 feet and might not be 400 pounds.
Legit.
Like, that's real.
Like, that is definitely real.
Oh, my God. Tony.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
Tell the people where they can find your work.
You can find me at The Athletic, and you can find me at T Jones on the NBA on Twitter, and you can find me at T Jones Athletic on Instagram, or you can find me on Facebook. But my daughter said that only old people use Facebook.
I'll say this, man. Like I haven't had a Facebook in 7 or 8 years, something like that. It's been a while.
So what you're saying is that my daughter is correct.
I think your daughter is right on that. But like, look, like that's me, okay. Like being. You know, I've never been a huge fan of Facebook's tactics. Well, let's go with that.
Yeah. I mean, like I told, you know, when my daughter turned 17 and, you know, I wished her a happy birthday on Facebook, had her picture up and all that stuff. And I was like, do you want to go on Facebook and say thank you? She's like, ew, no. I said, no. She's like, She was like, Dad, if I'm ever on Facebook, it would just represent the low point of my existence. I was just like, okay, great.
I just don't even know. That's amazing. That has to be how we end the podcast, right? Like, that's got to be it.
Yeah, that's how we end the podcast.
There's nothing better. Please remember, rate, review, subscribe, do everything you can to support the show. We will be back later this week. I'm going to do a deep dive into the rookie class with our good friend of the program, Matt Penny, as we wait for the college basketball season and NBA draft stuff to kick in. But until next time, we'll talk soon. Bye.